guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Actually, it's a Mackie and Judd production. Talking Twins is the show, as we do each Monday. Zolgad, Jake DePue, and executive producing Declan Goff. And all right, Jake DePue. So we did our last show on Monday, May 3rd. The Twins played Texas that night in the start of a four-game series, and they won that game. And we said, a great stretch of games against bad teams. They then lost their next three to Texas at home, by the way. They went to Detroit on Friday. They won 7-3, and we said, well, maybe there's something here. And then they got beat 7-3 themselves on Saturday. I guess by the grace of God, they got rained out on Sunday. This team is the second worst team in the American League, and I think the third worst team in baseball, held out of last place only by the fact that the Tigers are so awful. The Twins right now with Sunday and Monday off, and then starting a series Tuesday in Chicago against the White Sox, are 12-20. And I say we rip the Band-Aid right off and get to a patented DePue Twins meltdown. Because at this point in time, I think there's enough Twins fans who are disgusted, who are disappointed, and want the truth. And right now, there is no sugarcoating this. Like, there's nothing we're going to tell you. Hey, just wait. It's a long season, okay? So the floor is yours about what the hell has gone wrong 32 games into this season.
Can we just talk about the Wild instead?
No, because we've got that show and it's me and Dex and we're set now.
Yeah,
sorry.
Unfortunately.
Sorry, dude.
I know.
We got a Viking show. No, you elected to be on the Twins show because you love baseball. So you have to suffer. But I know that you don't suffer silently, which is why I like you being on this show.
Well, I appreciate it. I like being on this show, despite the fact that we have to talk about what's turning out to be a pretty bad team. There's really nothing positive to talk about. But I do want to talk a little bit about the front office, because I think I'm still a fan of Falvey and Levine and the whole front office. I think they've done a good job for sure. But I used to think they were a top five front office in baseball. In 2019, I definitely had that opinion. And I don't really think that anymore. And when you look at their history, they've now had, this is year five. They took over in November 2016. It's been a mixed bag. They've produced some really good teams for sure. No playoff success, obviously. But they've also made quite a few mistakes. And I think one of the biggest criticisms of this front office is the lack of starting pitching that they've developed. You know, they really haven't developed anybody. There really aren't any good young arms. Barrios had already made his major league debut when they arrived. He certainly, held steady as a 3.5 to 4 ERA guy, but he hasn't gotten significantly better, I wouldn't say, on their watch. And other than that, it's like, who have they really developed? The big guys were from Fernando Romero and Steven Gonsalves. Those guys are now gone. Other than that, I mean, they've got some nice guys in the minors, Duran, Balazovic, Josh Winder, but nobody's made an impact at the major league level. And I would have expected by year five, given Falvey's background in particular in Cleveland, developing pitching, I would have expected that we'd have some young arms in the rotation. And that hasn't happened at all. Their rotation is, Maeda, Pineda, Happ, Shoemaker, all guys that they've brought in. So I think that's a pretty legitimate criticism that it's just not there. There's the pitching pipeline has not come to fruition the way we thought it would.
The bullpen too, right? Like mm-hmm. that's the thing that I don't get this because it seems to be, and I thought that Derek got the job because the trend was what? Young arms, lively arms come up fairly quickly and contribute. And with the Twins, one, A, that has not been the case, and B, a guy like Alcala, who's not a young man now, to me is still being handled consistently with kid gloves, and I don't understand why. Like, where is this mentality of let's give these kids a shot? It's very weird, and it runs to me. It runs counter to what I would expect and what I think I'm seeing in baseball, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You mean in terms of developing starting pitching
and bringing them up and slotting them in and not being all kid gloves about, oh, my God, if he fails, he's ruined.
Yes.
I'm not saying that you can treat everybody the same, but I am saying it feels like teams are acquiring and or drafting guys and fast tracking them, because if you've got a good arm, you've got a good arm.
Right. That's exactly right. And we're not seeing that. You're right that the guys that have come up have been treated with kid gloves, I think, to a certain extent. Alcala certainly in that mix. But there just haven't been many guys that have come up. I Duffy and Rogers have gotten better for sure. But, you know, they didn't protect Nick Anderson. All they had to do was add him to the 40-man back in 2018. He's become one of the best relievers in baseball. They traded away Ryan Pressly when I believe he still had another year of control after, they traded him in July and he still had another year of control after that. He's been one of the best relievers in the league for Houston. So, you know, they've had guys in their system that they've let go. And I think one of the biggest, honestly, is Waskar Inoa, who pitched 6 great innings on Sunday Night Baseball for the Braves. I think he's 23 now. And he's looking like a potential top of the rotation guy for Atlanta. You know, they traded him for one start of Jaime Garcia. If you remember back in 2017, they then traded Jaime Garcia for Dietrich Enns and Zach Littell, who they've both DFA'd. You know, so that's a pretty good example right there of a really young arm who had a lot of potential, who they could have developed, that they traded away for basically nothing, you know. They've made other mistakes. You know, 2017, they traded at the deadline. They traded Brandon Kinsler, who was an all-star closer and had a number of good years after that for Tyler Watson, who hasn't developed into anything. And they made the playoffs that year, you know, and they didn't have their closer. In 2018, they signed a bunch of guys that made for a clubhouse that I think a lot of people would say was not very it was not a well-functioning clubhouse, you know, at Addison Reed and Logan Morrison and Lance Lynn, you know, that kind of brought down that season. They also released Anibal Sanchez that year in spring training, who went on to have 2 outstanding years that year and the next year. Yep. You know, they, in 2019, they didn't get a starter when they badly needed one. That team was special. That 2019 team was really special. And they clearly needed a starter and they didn't get one. All they got was Sergio Romo, who was good, and Sam Dyson, who, you know, did nothing for them.
Well, and who
basically
they got. And that trade itself to me is, and I kept going back to the Dyson trade. To this day, I don't get it. Like, he was hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they were maybe misled on that. I don't know.
No, I know, but I mean, they didn't do a thing about it. I asked Derek, I believe at the time, after that was done, I said, are you going to go back at them and try and get compensation? I mean, the Giants screwed you basically. And he's like, oh, no, probably not. You know, and it's just like, what the hell happened there? Like, that was a very bizarre. But so the scary thing that in going through the list that you're going through, Jacob Pugh, the scary thing about it to me is this. As surprised as we are, I think, and I definitely am, by how this Twins team is doing right now, the list that you're going through is really instructive. And I get that it's not huge names, and so it's not this obvious superstars being traded or something, but it's very instructive to like what they haven't done well. And those things, and those things start to eventually add up, right? So like, that's a really interesting list of guys, and like what looked to be as a one-off move, potentially not consequential, but if you put them all together, become extremely consequential and a big deal. And perhaps I shouldn't be as surprised that this team is scuffling given that.
Yeah. And just to finish my point, you know, they didn't really, the bullpen signings that they made this year have obviously backfired on them spectacularly. You know, Colome and Robles has been okay. But, you know, they had a clear need in the bullpen and they didn't really address it. And that's brought them down. So I'm highlighting all the negative. They've obviously done a lot of positive as well. And the record shows that. And the Maeda trade was fantastic. The Nelson Cruz signing was very good. They've done a lot of good. But I think it's fair to point out that they've made a lot of mistakes as well. And these trade deadlines have not treated them well. You know, Akil Baddoo, we'll see if he ends up being a regular in the majors. They certainly could have used him this year. His numbers are certainly a lot better than Jake Cave. You know, they traded away Lamont Wade. They could have used him this year. And so between all of that and then the mismanagement in the playoffs, which is partly on Rocco, and we've talked a lot about that throughout this podcast. But I just, you know, I still think they're a good front office. I'm certainly not advocating for firing them. I think they've done a good job. But they have made mistakes, and it's coming back to bite them this year.
It also doesn't feel like they are doing a great job from the top on down of handling this crisis. Like, it doesn't feel like they're prepared for what happens if things go wrong. It feels like It feels like they try too hard when things aren't going well to go about their business like it's still normal when it's definitely not. Like Rocco still, I'll give you a prime example that they are on the precipice of. They are on the precipice of, because this is not at this point a small sample size, right? Like we're now into 32 games. You've won 12 games. I need to see them be willing to apply the pressure because it's basically going to be off here soon and start to play Larnach, Kirilov. And if Sano doesn't play, I don't care now. The point being is don't treat, we're getting close to the point where I don't treat these games like, well, I got to play my guys, right? They're my guys. I think that we are on the precipice of this team where they should just say, we're going to play the guys that, one, give us a chance, but two, point to the future and get them experience and play them. And you know what? If you have any chance of busting out of this horrendous slump, right? I think it goes to turnover and playing different guys. You know, this whole thing of Jake Cave playing like he's some type of veteran that you need, Jake, makes no sense to me. This whole thing of Miguel has to play again. No, he doesn't, you know? So when Kirilov comes back, he plays a ton. Larnach continues to play. And I almost don't care if he struggles. Let him struggle here. Let him, if he's good, if he is going to be as good as they expect, let him take his lumps now. But, you know, this whole Kyle Garlick starting for us. Why? Like, why? At some point here, flip the page. This whole mantra of, well, we got these veterans or these guys that we like who need to play. No, you've got guys, you've got, you're close to having, in my opinion, two sets of guys. One is the guys who, like Kepler and Polanco, you have to find out, right? But two is this young crop. Get them playing time. Get them experience. Because at the rate you're going, your strategy right now on a daily basis is essentially not working.
Yeah, so as far as Kirilov, I mean, he will play when he comes back. It sounds like surgery is still a possibility there. So there's no guarantee. I mean, they gave him a cortisone shot, and he's going to try to swing a bat. So either he's going to come back relatively soon, or he might be out for a long time after surgery. But yeah, I mean, we're getting to the point now. You know, I think once they hit 10 games under 500, which should come this week, that's pretty much the point where I think the season is basically lost. You know, I think in reality, we're probably already there, but I want to give them one more week. They're playing the White Sox six times in the next nine games. So let's give them a shot and see if they can somehow do some damage. It seems very unlikely, but you never know. But after that point, I want to see those guys you mentioned, and I think we will. I want to see more of Nick Gordon. You know, Nick Gordon had an electric debut. He was fantastic in his debut. Stole a couple of bases. He had made a really nice defensive play. We've only seen him one game. He's been up, you know, for 7 or 8 days now. If you remember, they called him up the first time for 3 days and he never even got into a game. Like, let's see what he can do. So, yeah, I would give them another week or two. But then I think if it stays the way it is, I think first you trade Andrelton Simmons because he has a lot of value to a contending team. And I think there's a very real possibility that the whole COVID situation has been a pretty big factor in that clubhouse. We don't know because we don't have access, but you know, he's, you know, we've talked about Simmons and his views. And so I just think if they're not going to contend, they got to get rid of him pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then you start thinking about trading, you know, a lot of these veteran guys like Cruz and Happ and other guys like that on 1 year deals and see what the kids can do. But yeah, I mean, as far as Jake Cave, I don't get that. I don't understand why he's getting as much playing time as he is.
Because they think he's a professional, competent player. And my point is, play your kids. Let your kids see what they can do. Like, you're very close. Like, it's, you know, Garlick, it's not working. Like, I don't know what the plan is there. Like, oh, Kyle Garlick impressed us in spring training, and we think we might have something here. What? Come on. He's a utility guy.
Yes, but I will say, I mean, if you look at Garlick's numbers, he's been good.
No, he has. So's my guy, Astadilla. And guess what I think? He shouldn't be playing much.
But
like, I want a real team. I don't want to, well, we'll get by with this guy. And, oh, look at how he swings above at pitches above his head. I don't want that guy. I want to build a real team here. Like this feels like a one-off amateur baseball team to me.
But okay. So let me push back on a second. Sure. For a second, who would you play? Cause there aren't that many kids that are ready that aren't playing. I mean, like who would you play in place of Kyle Garlick and Jake Cave?
I would have an outfield right now when Arise comes back, probably, of Arise in left. I'd move Kepler to center. Just I got to play him because he might just stink now. I'd move Kepler to center, Larnach to right. When Kirilloff comes back, he plays first. Sano will still play, but I would not play him on a daily basis because I think that that's become an exercise in futility. If I move Simmons, which I actually like that, I move Polanco back to short because I don't care. I move Gordon to second base. I play him a lot. I find out what I have. Again, this is, to me, it's about discovery. I can, Astudillo and Garlick and Cave, I can tell you right now what they are. And if I can, they can. JD continues to play third base, of course. So, but what I'm doing is, I'm all about discovering things, and I want Arise in left as much as possible because I don't think he is a train wreck there, but he's definitely not a polished product. And so if I can polish him there, like it just does me no good to play these guys who they see as, oh, but he's professional. I don't give a crap about that. So I am about discovery. I'm about discovery and look, if they are going to trade guys, which they have done before, it means that they don't care that much about the people, which it's pro sports, you shouldn't. Like, I'm not saying that you should be bad to them, but you have no obligation to play guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right there, I've carved myself out the opportunity to see guys or to get them experience where I want to, as opposed to, oh, Jake Cave and center might help me win a ball game. Oh, bleep that. Your team's not any good. You know, like he can pinch hit. I'm not kicking him to the curb. Not yet, at least. But I don't need him starting. Let Kepler start because I need to, when it comes to Max, this is the year. Like, you got to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's not good, then he should be gone.
Yes. And I mean, I agree with your basic point. And I think we're a couple of weeks away from that. Like, guys like Kyle Garlick can help you now. But if you're a losing team, there's no reason to give him at bats. You know, you got to see what the kids can do. And I think we're getting to that point. I think they're still holding out some hope that they can miraculously turn it around. And it's possible. It's possible. We're only 32 games in. I don't think it's likely. I don't think it's going to happen. But I understand why they're not jumping ship yet. But we're close. And again, this stretch of tough games that they have coming up against the White Sox and Oakland, and then a little bit down the road is New York and Houston. You know, we'll have a pretty good idea by June 1st if this team has any chance of making a comeback. I think at that point, you're not going to see, assuming they don't make a big comeback, I don't think we're going to see Jake Cave and Garlick and some of these guys. But this is a terrible situation. I mean, this season could not have gone worse to this point. I mean, it could not have gone worse. If you had told me at the beginning of the year that they would be 12-20, on May 10th, I would absolutely have not believed that for a second, because they're trying. I mean, they're trying to win, you know, and they have a worse record than a lot of teams that are pretty clearly not trying to win. You know, Seattle has a winning record, and, you know, they're Kevin Mather, I think his name was, came out, you know, at the beginning of the season before he got fired and basically said they were tanking, more or less. You know, the Orioles, some of these teams that are tanking are having more success than the Twins. So, this has been a total train wreck. And I think a lot of it has to do with the bullpen and the fact that they didn't address the bullpen.
100%.
And combine that with pulling starters early. Now, I did see a stat, I think it was Gleeman, tweeted out that the Twins are like top five in the league in terms of innings and pitches. And so maybe that criticism is a bit unfair, although I will say, for some of these teams that are rebuilding and have bad staffs, you know, of course they're not going to have, they're not going to go deep into games, right? So like among contenders, I think the Twins are very much middle of the pack when it comes to innings and pitches. But there have been a number of examples where guys were at 80 something pitches and in my view could have thrown another inning.
That stat is completely flawed. Here's why. And this is why you have to watch games and you use stats. You can't use stats or eye test alone. That stat's completely flawed because of this. It's situationally and who he pulls. So the entire rotation, right? The entire rotation makes up that stat.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Shoemaker, I would take out in the second personally. So anytime he's been pulled, I don't give a damn. So take him out. All right. Now take Hap out or not. Don't care again. It's three guys we're talking about. And going back to the playoffs, Maeda and Barrios being pulled was inexcusable, inexplicable, and stupid. So if you want to go, so the problem with that stat is you have to get that stat down to three guys, and then we have to take it game by game of when they get pulled, and Pineda, Maeda, Barrios. And that is there's no way to do that stat correctly because it's too all-encompassing. So, because I'm never talking about, well, you shouldn't have pulled the fifth guy. I don't care. I don't care when he pitches or does not. It's three guys. And as I told you before, Pineda is a horse. He's a huge man. I ride him. And you know what? His arm falls off. That ain't my problem. I don't care. So going back to that, that's why the marrying in all sports too, Jake, the marrying of stats and eye test is extremely important. And to just use stats or this is what I think I saw is the problem. So this has to be boiled down to when does Rocco pull guys? Who is he pulling and why?
Well, and I also think, and I said this last week, if you're going to pull guys an inning, you know, before they would presumably be pulled at 100 pitches or whatever, you better have a really good pen. And that is something, you know, I thought the stat was interesting. I agree. It's flawed for a number of reasons. But that's something that stat doesn't take into account. Like when you have a really crappy pen,
of course.
And to be fair to Gleeman, he has pointed out how bad the pen has been. It's been like historically mm-hmm. bad in terms of win probability added and stats like that. But, you know, if your pen is that bad and you're trying to win, then that's all the incentive you need to push the starters one more inning, especially right. veterans who have proven they can do it, like Pineda and Maeda and Hap. Like those guys, you know, they've been in the big leagues for a long time. They know, you know, what they can do and how far they can push themselves. And if they're willing to go another inning, then you put them out there for another inning when your bullpen options, you know, leave a lot to be desired. So I think there's been a lot of mismanagement there, but in terms of, you know, the theme of this podcast, the front office, it's really the front office, their failure to bring in serviceable pen arms that's really come back to bite them. You know, Colomé has been obviously terrible. Robles has not been great. And Stashek, a guy who they really relied on in the postseason and throughout the last couple of years, has also not been good and been sent down twice now. You know, and it led to them DFAing Blankenhorn, who's the number 18 prospect in their system. And I know he had that terrible error, but that's not a reason to DFA someone. They had to DFA him just to bring in Derek Law, you know, kind of a journeyman middle reliever, because they were so desperate for bullpen arms. So they put themselves in this situation. They really did.
All right. Byron Buxton. It's a hip strain now. It's grade two. He's out for, I believe, to quote Rocco, several weeks. I don't know where to begin now. I'm not surprised. But I mean, when this guy is healthy and can play, we've talked about it. Unbelievable, phenomenal talent, deserves a ton of credit for turning himself from a disaster at the plate into a really good player. But Jake, I go back and forth here because when he's good, he's so good, but I am now back to, how do you sign him long-term to the contract he's going to want when you can never, ever count on going a month without something going wrong? And I don't even want to assess blame here. I have no idea why. But at this point in time, the why doesn't matter. It's the what. And the what is this guy can never consistently play.
Yeah, and it just sucks. It sucks. It sucks for everyone. It sucks, obviously, most for Buxton. It sucks for the organization. It sucks for the fans who love watching him play. I mean, the guy's such an electric player. I tweeted out this sort of like overly emotional, sentimental tweet right after he went on the IL. It's like, you know, he's this passionate, hardworking player, and he deserves better. because I really believe that. Like, I really believe that he like he's a guy you cheer for, you know. And it's as far as sports go, a tragedy when you see somebody who's supremely talented and wants it this badly, and just his body won't let him do it, you know. So as far as the contract extension stuff, it's going to be one of the most interesting dynamics of you know the offseason in 2 years. What do the Twins or what does the league offer this guy who's just such a great player, good clubhouse guy, but absolutely cannot stay on the field? I don't know. I personally would give him a lot of money in a really short, like I think I would give him something
like 1 month period. Like, hey, I'll pay for May because I think you might stay healthy for this May.
Yeah, I think I would maybe give him like, I don't know. I'd have to think more about it. But would I commit a lot of years and over $100 million to him? I don't think I could do that. No, you just can't. You just
not
can't.
This team.
No, and it just sucks. And you know, hopefully he'll be back in a few weeks or a month. But I mean, there's just no guarantee that he's going to stay on the field even when he does come back. And I hope he comes back and at least, you know, makes an All-Star team and does things like that. But what can you say? I mean, he was the MVP of the league for the first month of the season. But, you know, he injured himself on kind of a nothing play, just a running down the line play. I don't know if it was related to the hamstring and the knee or not, but either way, it's just too bad. And I would certainly offer him some sort of extension, but it would not be.
They've tried, though, you know.
Yeah, it's been very team friendly.
Yeah, but I can't blame them.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's like, what do you offer him that's almost not insulting to the player that he's become? Because he can't stay healthy. And I don't think it has anything to do with him not pushing through. I don't think it has anything to do with him not being tough.
No.
Like, I just think that he finds a way, and I don't know why, to get hurt. But my God, it's always, you know, Jake, he's going to come back from this at some point. And my guess is something else goes wrong.
Well, based on the injury history, I mean, you have to assume that that's a strong possibility. Yeah. I mean, what would you give him? Well, if right now, if his agent came to you right now and said, we want to talk extension, what would be a reasonable offer in your mind? Oh, and Dex, too, if you want to chime in.
Yeah, I'd give him, I'd probably offer 3 years at this point with an option, perhaps, because I don't want to go five because of term, but it would have to, but the number itself would have to be in my favor, which I would guess they turned down, and they're probably right to do so, because my guess is somebody will pay him, but I just can't do it. Not with this team. If you give him anything close to a contract that he wants, we can complain from now until 2028, but it's going to hurt my team. And if he can't play, it's going to preclude me from signing guys. You think the Maurer contract was a problem? Imagine one for Buxton.
Yeah, I would probably go, and he would say no to this, but I'm playing from the poker side that I'm offering him the contract. I would give him 2 years, and I would give him $38 million. I would give him a crap load of money for the first 2 years, and I know he could get a longer-term deal on the open market, but I'm just going to tell him, hey, we'll give you a good amount of money. We'll give you close to $20 million per for these next two seasons. And if you don't want that and you want to take a bigger deal somewhere else, then do it. I can't commit to a guy who is this injured. I can commit to him, though, with what he's been able to do lately. But his speed is his biggest attribute. And even though his health has deterred him from staying on the field, there is going to come a point where when Byron Buxton's 30 years old and he's no longer the fastest player, he can still be one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. Jerrod Dyson still has a major league career because he's a very good defensive player. But if his speed starts to deteriorate naturally as you get older, I can't commit to you, and especially with your injury. So I'd go short term. And I know he probably would say, hell no, but that's what I would do. I'd give him a lot of money for 2 years and then say bye-bye.
Yeah, you completely stole my take. I was going to say 2 years, $40 million for all of the reasons that you just listed. He deserves to make a lot of money per year. But yeah, I mean, when his speed goes, he'll still be a very good hitter, obviously, as he's proven this year and really last year, too. But when his speed goes, a lot of his value goes. So I think 2 years, $40 million with maybe a huge team option, like a team option for like $30 million for the third year that they can decline if he's not healthy. But that gives him financial security. You know, it gives him, you know, financial security for him and his kids for the rest of their lives. But it doesn't totally bankrupt you if it doesn't work out. I don't think he'd take that. And I don't blame him. I understand why he'd want to test the open market. But yeah, if I'm the Twins, I can't give him $100 million plus, as much as I want to, and as much as I want him to be, you know, the cornerstone of the franchise and play 130 games every year. He just hasn't shown that he can do that, unfortunately. So I think he's probably going to go to free agency. And you're right. Maybe some team like the Mets will overpay him. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe he'll stay healthy and have a great career into his 30s. But
I don't think at this point there's any chance. I think he's going to break down every time. And if you do give him 2 years, you'd be paying him for 100 games max, is my guess. He's going to miss 60. I mean, it's incredible. He finds different ways to get hurt. His body does. And I don't know how, but, and the problem is this too, what makes him in some ways such a valuable player, the ability to go make catches and to run like the wind, are the exact things that get him hurt. So like, if you did get him to just pull up on all, you know, hey, go slow down, which he's tried to do, slow down, don't run into fences, which we've talked about, quit crashing into fences and dropping your body onto the warning track because you basically jumped as high as Superman, all of that. And he's like, okay, cool. He becomes less valuable on the spot. So I just don't see a good way here. I mean, to stay healthy, he would have to just be tough to start with. And I think he is tough, but this is a guy in spring training, boys, who missed time because he chipped a tooth or something. Like, I mean, it's just, he finds ways. It's just bizarre. It's like, it follows him around. So,
let me just say real quick, that's part of the reason I think I like him so much. And a lot of fans like him so much is that he's willing to sacrifice. Like, he plays so hard. He sacrifices his body. He doesn't make business decisions, and he should. And like you said, they've been trying to get him to do that more. But that's part of what makes me like him personally, is how hard he plays. But unfortunately, it's leading to the injury. So, yeah.
Last thing, do you ever think we do a Talking Twin show where I could make this statement, and it's 1,000% true, and it's really sad? Miguel Sano at this point in his career is a better first baseman with the glove than he is at the plate. To me, that's the most telling thing. Like, of all of the things that I could say, I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would ever say that this guy is a better fielder. He is more valuable as a glove man than he is at the plate. 129, 299, 226 is the slash line right now. Since coming back from the hamstring, struck out 9 times and walked twice in 19 plate appearances, 17 official at-bats. He is a better defensive replacement late in games than he is a guy going to the plate. That's sad.
It is. It's too bad. And, you know, he had an at-bat in the 5th inning of the 2nd game against Detroit where they had just tied it on the Donaldson home run and then loaded the bases with 1 out. And I think they brought in a new reliever. And he swung at the first pitch.
Yes. And I thought the same thing.
And popped it out to, it was a pop out to second.
Yep.
And it was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, the only strength that you have right now is your ability to draw walks. You know, he's totally lost at the plate in terms of making hard contact. And to swing at the first pitch there and just weakly pop out, I mean, that really killed the momentum. They didn't add on, and they ended up losing that game. That was such a bad at bat. And Rocco basically said, he didn't call it Sano by name, but he said after the game, our bats were really good until we got to men in scoring position, and then we just
couldn't
get it done. It was a terrible at bat.
That's him now.
Unfortunately, it is. And you're right with the glove. He actually is pretty good with the glove. But I mean, we talk about him every podcast, and it's just I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know where the plate discipline went. I don't know if it's a work ethic issue. If it's just, I have no idea. But he's unplayably bad at the plate. I mean, he just is. Like, he's a power hitting first baseman who's hitting for no power. He's turned into Chris Davis, you know? So yeah,
exactly. All right, sir. Appreciate it. Hopefully next week there's something good to talk about.
Yeah.
If nothing else, let's talk about who to trade ASAP. Okay.
We'll
put together a list.
I have a feeling we're going to be having a lot of those types of conversations over the next couple of months.
All right. He's Jake. I'm Judd. That's Dex. We'll talk to you on Talking Twins next week.